Well, one of the striking things about commodity bonds is that they basically don't exist, and they should. After figuring out what the problem is, I try to think about policies and institutions that will help countries to avoid the pitfalls, a country that has natural resource wealth. And one of the problems is the volatility, that if the price goes up, and especially if you're booming and you're borrowing on world markets to develop, let's say, your oil fields, you need to invest and borrow for the exploration. In the past, most international debt has been denominated or issued in foreign currency, in dollars or euros or whatever, and that's had problems. But denominating in the local currency isn't necessarily the answer either. So the proposal is that if you're borrowing anyway, that instead of linking the terms of the loan to dollars or to any other currency, you link it to the price of the commodity, let's say to oil. If the price of oil goes up or the price goes down, you're automatically hedged because you have the export proceeds that match up. The export proceeds go up when debt service obligations go up, and they go down when they go down, and it happens automatically. You don't have to go through some painful, restructuring or default or negotiation with your creditors or whatever. It's a very efficient mechanism of risk sharing. This idea has been around for a while.
Why hasn't it been used before?
It's a bit of a mystery. I mean, you need liquidity in a market. It may be a chicken and egg thing that everybody's waiting for someone else to go first. And when I ask finance ministers from these countries or ask Wall Street types, that's sort of the answer I get. Keep in mind that there's a very natural customer for these bonds, unlike a lot of financial engineering, these complicated credit default swaps or whatever. There's a very obvious customer. If you're an oil producer, you want to be hedged against the possibility that the price of oil might fall. But on the other side of the market, there are power utilities in the industrialized countries and airlines, and they want to be hedged against the chance that the price of oil might go up. And so there's a very natural customer, and it's a mystery to me kind of why. But I think that maybe the international financial institutions, the World Bank and the IMF, could play a useful role getting this market started up.
So another way you've suggested that nations can battle the resource curse is to reduce pro-cyclicality of macroeconomic policy. That's a mouthful. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Pro-cyclicality is this discouraging tendency that has been there very strongly in the past for developing countries in general, but especially for commodity producers. Pro-cyclicality means when there's a boom, you're growing rapidly, the price of your export commodity is high on world markets, you're producing a lot of it, you're exporting a lot. So when there's a boom, the government borrows a lot, capital floods comes into the country, the government spends a lot, and so the whole economy actually goes into the bubble phase. And then when the price goes back down, then everything crashes, and you would be going into recession anyway, but then the recession is much worse than it needs to be because the government is forced to cut back on spending because it can no longer borrow. And so you get this roller coaster ride where the highs and the lows are more extreme than they need to be. That's what pro-cyclicality is.
So saving during the good times in order to have a cushion for the bad. It sounds easier said than done. How have political leaders been held accountable to stick to those principles? I believe that Chile's done a particularly good job at that.
Chile, as you mentioned, is kind of the poster child because during the period when copper prices were booming, they saved most of it and paid down their debt and, in fact, achieved a credit rating that's better, not just better than their Latin American neighbors, but better than some European countries. And when the recession hit, they were able to spend more, and they also got hit by an earthquake. And I would argue that it's not just that these particular leaders happened to do a good job, but Chile has adopted institutions. And going back to the year 2000, Chile adopted some fiscal policy institutions that could kind of work in any country. The rules are that in a boom, you can spend the money only if the boom is permanent, what's called structural, if the copper prices are higher permanently. If it's purely transitory and it's going to go back down, then you need to save it. So what Chile has done, which is different, which they actually codified in law in 2006, is that the judgment as to what's permanent versus temporary is not made inside the government. It's made by an independent panel of experts who are kind of insulated from the political process.
And so what is the role of larger institutions like the International Monetary Fund to boost this sense of financial security, economic security?
Technical advice is one area where the IMF can help. If the IMF or World Bank is already lending to a West African country anyway, you could denominate that loan, link that loan to the world price of the commodity, and then turn around and lay off the commodity risk by selling the bonds to whoever wants to buy. Power utilities and airlines and steel companies ought to have an interest in going long in oil or iron and so on. But they're probably not interested in taking the credit risk of lending to a West African country. That's just not their business. But that's where the IMF and the World Bank come in to do the matchmaking and to make it work and to hopefully create a market pool that's deep enough and liquid enough that companies, borrowers, lenders can all gain confidence that that market will be there and make the market work.